Good evening.
Good evening.
So in this nice weather, many of you maybe have gone for a walk or a hike in the forest. There's nice places to hike around here. So imagine that you and your friend go for a hike in the woods somewhere, and you come across a tree that's fell down, and you say, "Oh, I wonder why the tree fell down. Oh, maybe the rain weakened the roots, and so it fell down." Say, "Oh no, I think it got struck by lightning." Oh no, maybe there's some disease that weakened it. So you can, we do that as human beings. We try to find reasons for things that happen in our life. And if an animal comes by, or a bird, or a butterfly, an insect, and sees a tree down, it doesn't do that. It doesn't say tree, it doesn't say up, it doesn't say down, it just, here I am. But that's how far our brains have evolved over the millions of years. The brain is now this wonderful entity that can do that, can ask questions, can solve problems, can think. And the other thing it can do is to plan, to do planning. And when you stop to think about the way you spend your days, you come to recognize that much of the energy of our life is devoted to planning the future. What will I do in the next hour? What will I do tomorrow? What will I do next year? What will I do in the many decades ahead? We're always planning. And it's been that way for humanity for centuries. And of course, as we know, it's not an idle capacity that humans have developed. It's very necessary. Living creatures have evolved this thinking capacity and this planning capacity to improve the chances of survival. That's what drives it. That's what drives the evolution of our mind. Survival for ourselves, survival for our family, and of course, planning has always been used as a way to try to improve our lives, try to improve our lifestyle, and also to create something. If we want to create something, we plan ahead, usually. So always in our mind there's this kind of question, what do I need to do? How should I plan for it? So if we want something to happen in the future, we make a plan. Most of us do. People make a plan. And that increases the chances that the activity and the event will go as we want, can go well. So planning, what we do in the mind, is an intellectual way of being ready. And we can do it when we know the event that we want to have happen, and the time and the place. If we know those things, we can make a plan. But we don't always know the time and the place, the space of some event that happens. We don't always know that. In other words, there's always surprises in our life. Things we can't plan for. Can't plan for these surprises. And they can be disturbing, these surprises. So the mind can't exercise its intellectual capacity for these kinds of events. We can't plan for them, but we can always be ready for them. We can always be ready for them. And this is the nature of our practice. We can always be ready in our mind to take care of whatever happens. So our practice is about keeping our mind ready for whatever appears in any time and in any space and any circumstances. And this is especially necessary when there is no plan, when we can't have a plan. So even if we are taken by surprise by some event, we can be ready to respond to it if we keep ourselves organized. And this is the nature of our practice. Even if we're taken by surprise, we can be ready if we keep ourselves organized. So in this practice, we organize ourselves by zazen, which means we organize ourselves in a very, very big way. Very big way. In other words, with what Buddhists call big mind. Big mind. A mind that is not just intellectual. When we organize ourselves through our practice, there's room for everything. Room for everything. And that includes the surprises, those unplanned events. And if we organize ourselves through zazen, everything is welcome. But if we do not organize ourselves, if we do not organize our mind in a big sense, there is no room in our mind. There is no room in our mind because the analytical part of our mind won't stop. Because it's organizing itself in a very narrow way. When it does that, everything that's in our mind gets crowded into a very small space. So we practice because we need to organize our mind in a big sense so we don't get distracted. In other words, that we are ready to welcome each appearance spontaneously. When our mind is like that, we don't feel the need to plan so much. Before we organize ourselves that way through our zazen, we think we need to plan every possible thing that may happen. But if we organize our mind through our practice, we don't care so much. Oh, whatever happens, I'll take care of it. When we don't feel the need to plan everything in the usual way, we find a great confidence in the knowledge that we will be able to take care of whatever happens. So, you know, we don't give up planning altogether. We still have to plan various events in our life. What to have for dinner tomorrow? How to prepare my kids for school? Those kinds of things. We have to plan. But if we organize our mind through our practice, then we can focus on the very important things and not worry so much about every little detail. Now, when we do plan, when we feel we need to plan for something for the future, we often, or most of the time, I think, use our past experiences to inform us, to help us. experiences provide us some useful information on how to plan for something. But sometimes a past experience will not work in a new situation. Today's situation is not the same as last year's, so last year's experience may not work today. So the plan that we develop based on experience, we may have to alter it if the situation is new. So we need to have a ready mind to show us how to use our experiences appropriately. In other words, when we have a ready mind, we will know that to rely on that past experience today doesn't work. If we don't have a ready mind, we may insist that our past experience really works. I'm going to make it work. I'm going to force fit it into today's situation. But a ready mind can tell us, well, it doesn't quite fit. I have to do something else. How to use our experiences appropriately comes from Zazen mind. Our experiences are very useful, and the pleasant ones and the not so pleasant ones, they're all very useful. And they're all quite beautiful. Our experiences can be like stepping stones. You can use them to make a path. The path out here. Stepping stones, each stone is different shape. No two stones the same. But there is a path out of all these odd-shaped stones. We can make a path out of our experiences in the same way we make a path out of those stones. But the important point is to recognize their relationships in a very large sense. Not do they fit perfectly, but how do they relate? If we can recognize the relationship of our experiences, the next stone can be placed well. This is much like the Zen stone gardens that you see. When you see the famous stone gardens in Japan, first impression is that the stones are just randomly placed. There's no logic, you know. You look at the stone, there's no logic. Why is that one there? Why is that one there? It looks random when you first look at them. But these stone gardens are much admired as works of art because they express something universal. They're not random. The stones are not placed random. We cannot make a stone garden like that with the rational mind. If we try to place stones logically, we can't do it. Those stone gardens in those Zen monasteries came out of somebody's Zazen practice, somebody's ready mind, which is beyond thinking, beyond planning. So the effort that we make to place the stones in our life is important. In other words, we need to know how to use the experiences of our life to guide our life, to make a path. Well-placed stones is the work of our life, actually. we are always, when we practice, like tonight, we are always creating a Zen garden with our life. When we have a ready mind. And this is the best way to plan our life, with a ready mind. So our practice is about our determination to live in the present, to be ready to respond to each moment, and not to be bound up too much by an image of our past or an image of ourself in the future. So to live in the truth means not to be distracted by photographs we carry around in our mind. Photographs of our desires in the past and our current, present desires. But to live in the truth is to be who we actually are today, not some fictitious person of memory or fantasy. This is how we can be continuously organized. So determination in practice does not mean to strive for perfection. It means to do our best in our present activity with whatever we have, whatever skills and resources we have. And it means if we become distracted, don't remain distracted. This is our practice. Come back to the present moment. Reorganize ourself. Reorganize our awareness when we become distracted. So we can say, Zen is the practice of reorganizing ourself. Continuously, moment after moment, we reorganize ourself. We are determined to keep our mind fresh and unobstructed. Then we are organized and ready. So we know, we recognize that it's necessary not to let our mind become too crowded. And in that way, we can enjoy our life in a very large sense. Doesn't mean enjoy life in a large sense, doesn't mean to have emotional and physical pleasures. It means to feel that every moment and every experience is sacred. Every moment and every experience has a purpose. Even the unpleasant ones. So if we can appreciate even the difficult times, we can enjoy our life, all of it, not just certain parts of it. And our Zazen mind is the best way to appreciate everything that happens. Even when some things don't go according to the plan. Many people who are not familiar with this practice and feel they would like to try it, quite often come with the idea that this practice will help us unravel some knots that are in our mind. But after practicing for some time, we come to realize that there are no such thing as knots to unravel. In Buddha's mind, there are no knots. Problem is, we create fictitious knots with too much mind activity. So that's why we say our practice is about expressing Buddha's mind, even when we are confused about something or we have some difficulties. We continually express Buddha's mind. Then we don't worry about knots. So our practice is to be ready and avoid emphasizing too much our successes and our difficulties. What we do in our practice is emphasize using our life in the best way, according to the truth of things. So when we come to practice, we should forget about having special experiences or exciting experiences. We should forget about obtaining anything from our practice. We try to let our mind be bigger than that. We simply let our practice keep our mind organized, ready for whatever appears, and then we can always be ready to create something. Does anyone have a question? Yes, please.
If sometimes the difficulties we experience become like too much or very acute, is the correct thing to simply observe and cease like to struggle against them?
I don't think we can cease a struggle if we have a difficulty that we have to resolve and overcome. We may have to struggle. But in the midst of the struggle, we should always try to be mindful of what's happening, what's going on. Learn from the effort we make in our difficulty. So when we work with some difficulty, when we struggle to resolve it, we are gaining some experience about that effort. The best thing to do is to remain totally aware of what's going on, so that the experience can help us understand, and help us as we continue our life. So awareness and struggle. And we can think of many examples of situations that we'd find ourselves in. Thank you. Yes, please.
So you have covered a lot of contents in a very short period of time. And I would like to, I'm still trying to digest what you have said as between memories and fantasies. Memories might be more concrete than fantasies because it's a part of our experience. So when we are trying to get rid of our memories and fantasies, what additional things I should do to get rid of my memories?
Oh, you can't get rid of memory.
So memories will impact my my present, or my, so my memories will impact my present, my past will impact my present.
Yes, your memories are part of our wisdom, you know. The point is not to be overwhelmed by those past experiences. Just let them inform us. Let us learn from them. Let them help us. Treat them gently, you know. If we have a memory of something that we did in the past that was very useful, solved the problem, if we become attached to it, it becomes a habit. And then we will always try to use that in every situation from then on. And it doesn't work in every situation. It only worked then. So the memory is there, but today is fresh. So you can't throw away your memory, but we just don't grasp it. Just hold it like this rather than like this. Thank you. Yes, please.
How about a memory of an individual that played a large part of your life, the loss of a loved one, that you find yourself preoccupied with memories of a person that doesn't, the memories don't necessarily inform us of how to live current day-to-day activities, but it does inhibit us from living in the present.
Yes. Yes, we call it grief.
Yeah.
We call it grief. And grief stays with us for a long time, usually. And it does inhibit. It overwhelms us, and we have no choice. When we lose something that was very important to us. So there is no antidote, there is no medicine to make grief go away. So best thing for us to do is to try to be in our current life as much as we can. to lead a mindful life as much as we can, even though this grief is constantly pulling at us. Come back, reorganize ourselves so that we can live now. And if we do that, little by little, the grief will start to fade. And the memory will remain, but it won't be so sharp. It will lose its corrosiveness. You'll always remember that someone and the loss of it, but it won't overwhelm our life. So we try to reorganize ourselves just by coming back. And it can be painful. Grief can be painful. Thank you.